Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to ExpressPros.com to find your location. That's ExpressPros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Chris Ronchi, Amy Marks Kors, The Chris and Amy Show.
Check it out. St. Louis, Mound City, we are going to have a great day today.
On 104.1 FM.
Let's take it from the top.
KMOX.
Good rainy morning, friends. Hope you're doing well. It is The Chris and Amy Show, and we've got you for a short period of time today. And we'll tell you why in just a moment. 314-436-7900 to call in or text in. And you know what else you could do? Leave us a voice message, right? Directly from the Odyssey app. If you're listening to us there, you can drop in a message and send it to us, and we'll probably, well, not probably, we might play it on the air. How about that?
It's on them.
It is. If it's a good message, yeah. You're going to hear yourself. If it's not good, we're going to put it right in the garbage.
Yep.
Watch us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter if you like. We are at Chris Amy KMOX. You better be following us, man. What's the matter with you?
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everyone will be talking about.
Well, yesterday marked 100 days for President Trump. Today marks 15 days for Mayor Spencer. So we are going to talk to Kara Spencer today. She will join the show at 9:30.
And the U.S. economy contracted for the first time in 3 years. Obviously, a lot of market uncertainty. We'll look more into what that means.
And it is a huge game tonight for the St. Louis Blues. Might be even a little bigger for the Winnipeg Jets. But the game, the series in the playoffs tied at 2. Blues and Jets play tonight. Cardinals with a doubleheader today. And that is why we have a short show today. We are going to be with you until 10:40, and there is a split doubleheader in Cardinals baseball today. So they were supposed to play yesterday. They got washed out. Going to do it today. And it's also an early day tomorrow because they've got a day game tomorrow as well. So hope you like day baseball. You're getting a bunch of it. Here we are.
And I am excited about the Cardinals doubleheaders. And I am more excited about the Blues.
Mason Wynn batting second.
No.
Yeah, Mason Wynn is back in the, he's in the second spot of the order. Yeah, this is cool. He was going to bat second last night for the first time ever in his career, and that got pushed back, so now he's going to today. He's in the lineup hitting second. Isn't that cool?
You're excited about Mason Wynn. I'm excited about Winnipeg against the Blues.
Lars Nupar's leading off. Is that what you mean? All right, go ahead.
Respect. I don't give no respect.
Go ahead with
that's the story of my life. No respect.
That's right.
Go ahead with your Blues hat. Tell us how you're feeling, Amy.
I got my lucky Blues hat on. Why is it lucky? You want to know why? Ask me why it's lucky.
I know why it's lucky.
It's signed by Brett Hull.
Yeah, so you're wearing it.
Yeah, I don't do a lot of, I don't like paraphernalia and merchandise. I'm not a big.
So then why'd you get it signed?
It was a gift. from my dad.
Okay.
And I wear it because I feel like it means something more.
Okay.
I don't want to put it behind glass, put it in a box, and look at it. I'm wearing this thing.
Okay. So the signature is going to rub off, but whatever.
Yeah. It will just.
What's a rub off means? Do you remember that?
Yes. It was a lot of media saying,
yeah, that's right.
Yes. They asked. Okay. The media asked him about something rubbing off on him.
And he goes, what's a rub off means? Awesome.
It was great.
Awesome.
But, you know, what's really interesting, remember how I said I was talking to the Winnipeg media at the game the other night, and I said, so, how's Winnipeg? They're doing okay.
More like lose a peg, huh? All right.
Yeah. And they said they're absolutely freaking out. I mean, this is a franchise that, you know, going back to the Atlanta Thrashers, but has not been in the playoffs many times. And in recent years, they've been great, absolutely crushing in the regular season. And then they have these first round exits, highly disappointing for them. And there, some of the media veterans in Winnipeg have said they're viewing this as the most important game in modern Winnipeg Jets history. So not the OG Jets back in the 70s, but in modern Winnipeg Jets history, this is the single most important game. They are calling it a must win.
So you think they got that TBS? Do you know what TBS is?
Turner Broadcast Systems.
No, it's tight booty syndrome. So when they go into the game tonight, do you think they're feeling a little, uh-oh. How do you think Connor Hellebuck's feeling tonight?
He's probably feeling that.
You think so?
He's probably
a little TBS?
A little squeezy.
Yep. Probably making diamonds. Listen, do you think he is?
Can you say that?
Yeah, why can't you say that?
This is KMOX.
And?
Ranj.
Look. We've already got a guy rolling over in his grave. So what is it? What does it matter now? But I think that Winnipeg, they are probably losing it up there because this is their sport, right? Mm-hmm. Like this, nothing is bigger than this. Who do you think is freaking out more? My guess is it is the city of Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's Winnipeg or Toronto? Because it kind of sounds like in Toronto, they feel like they're about to blow that lead,
and
too.
I will say
and they're
this.
Still up. They're still up 3-2 on Ottawa. But I get the sense that with the way things have historically gone for the Maple Leafs, they probably are freaking out.
That's
right
a
now.
Great question. And I will say, as big as hockey is in Winnipeg, Toronto is next level. It's hard to rank Canadian teams against each other, but Toronto is a religion. It's a religion up there. And here's the thing with Toronto, and I want to get back to Winnipeg and how much they're freaking out and just the different vibes that we're getting from the teams right now. To Ranj's point, when he says, yeah, what's happened historically? Well, Austin Matthews, right? He is Toronto's, obviously not Connor McDavid and Edmonton
like
Oilers, but he's Toronto's Connor McDavid, right? He was supposed to be the chosen one. Toronto, in closeout playoff games in the Matthews era, because remember, they were up 3-0, correct, over Ottawa?
Yeah.
They were up 3-0 against Ottawa. They lost last night. So Toronto, in closeout playoff games in the Matthews era, are 1-14.
Oof.
1-14. You have a chance
to
close out a playoff series. You did that one time, that was against Tampa Bay in Game 6 in 2023. But stretching back to 2018, they have lost 14 games when they had a chance to close it out, including the last three, what you would call match point.
That is brutal, man.
They're facing match point, and they lose over and over again. So I do think Toronto's freaking out, and just because of the history of Toronto and it being an Original Six team, you just can't compare it. But with Winnipeg, they are very nervous up there. I don't think they're feeling confident. A lot of people have asked me, do they start Connor Hellebuck? Yes, you have to.
You have to at home. Especially at home, you have to.
Especially at home. And imagine you don't start Connor Hellebuck and you lose. Well, then
how
it's over. Then the franchise absolutely implodes. So yes, you start Connor Hellebuck. And I talked about how he just doesn't have the swagger. He doesn't have the confidence. And even him saying in the quote we played yesterday, I'll be better. It sounds like someone who's trying, like, no, I'm going to be better, instead of I'm going to do it. I'm going to get the job done. And I also realized it's the juxtaposition of Connor Hellebuck, who's going through it right now, with the absolute swagger of Jordan Bennington and his infamous, "Do I look nervous?" Bennington takes it to that next level of cocky slash arrogant, and he puts his money where his mouth is, because when he said, "Do I look nervous?" he came back with a Stanley Cup, and he's got that swagger. And Jim Montgomery, coach of the Blues, said that it's even his body language in the crease, that Jordan Bennington is a goalie that on the ice, in the blue paint, has swagger. How do you do that? I don't know. But Montgomery said all the guys in front of him pick up on that. It sets the tone. He leads from the blue paint, and the Blues feel that swagger as well.
I hope this doesn't happen, but there's a pretty good chance that we're talking about this tomorrow and the narrative has completely changed. And I hope not. The way to combat that is for the Blues to score very early. If you get a goal or two in that first period, you could pretty much bury them. You're still going to have to win another game, right? But that could go a long way you get it done early tonight.
The weird thing, and this happened in the Minnesota Vegas game, which ended up going into overtime last night, where Vegas gets on the board. I think 8 seconds later, Minnesota scored.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you've got to be careful that if you score early and you ride that high, that there must be a let up. Something happens in the seconds and the minute following that, where I feel like in this playoffs, there have been goals scored within seconds of each other. But, and of course, that's not any groundbreaking analysis there. What's interesting is in that last game, game four, Winnipeg came out of the gate strong. Winnipeg scored first, and the Blues were able to adjust, reset, and then take it to Winnipeg and get them on their toes. Because I thought, I wrote down in my notebook that Michael Kelly made fun of me for having, I wrote down in my notebook, like, Winnipeg adjusted. That's all I wrote. Winnipeg adjusted. Because in the first 5 minutes of game four, it looked more like the Winnipeg of games one and two.
I'll tell you this. The two games they played at home, the Blues, mm-hmm. looked dramatically different
yes.
than what they did in games one and two of the series.
Yes.
So you got to hope it doesn't flip back the other way, because they're on the road tonight. And hopefully they give Connor Hellebuyck a little bit of trouble, because if they do, like I said, they do it early, they could put tonight's game away fairly quickly. But then they have to keep pressing, obviously. You can't just, hey, we scored, we're good. Just pile on. I think the point I'm making is if you get to him early, maybe any of this doubt that we are projecting onto him maybe actually seeps into his subconscious if it hasn't already.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's what they have to do.
And Texter, quick note, did you see Jim Montgomery's face? He took a puck to the cheek.
Oh,
he's got
stitches
or at least a little like gauze over his cheek. He said he feels like a player. He was working with one of the players down low and a puck ricocheted off the goal.
He probably needed Panger there.
He needed Panger there?
Yeah, because he caught a puck in the last game.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could have saved him.
Well.
This texter asks, if we beat Winnipeg, do we win it all? What? Why'd you make that noise, Matt?
Because we're, well, first off, no.
First off, no.
There are four rounds of the playoffs. It's such a long road.
All right.
First off. No.
That's Amy Marks.
Calm
Kors.
Down.
The big jerk Matt Pajeski and Chris Ranji. 314-436-7900. Voice messages. Welcome from the Odyssey app. Tap that send a message button and we would love to hear from you. Chris and Amy on KMOX.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Chris and Amy show on 104.1 FM KMOX. Glad you're with us today on this rainy Wednesday. Ahead of Game 5 between the Jets and the Blues. Blues are the road team tonight. Couple of text messages weighing in. After Matt Pajeski just absolutely shut down with prejudice, a texter who asked the question, if the Blues beat Winnipeg, do they win it all? And Matt said, no, like, kind of with attitude. You heard it. One texter says, maybe he meant if we beat Winnipeg, do you think we can win it all?
Well, yes.
I mean, of course, they could win it all. Another message says, I think the texter meant if we got past them, do we go all the way? But you smart asses think everybody's dumb right away.
We do.
Not everybody. That's not true.
I feel like you assume
me
idiocy at
me?
All times. Yeah.
Only in this room. Not to our fine listeners.
I don't know. I think our listeners would beg to differ.
Another message here says, I believe this is the person who suggested the ultimate winner of the Tournament of Negligence, mm-hmm. Which was dropping your child in the zoo enclosure.
Harambe?
Yeah. So he says Harambe here. That's how we have a thing. That's how I know it's him. He says, is tonight a must win or is it a can't lose?
For who? For Winnipeg is
great question.
Winnipeg's on their heels here. This is a, they're calling it a must win in Winnipeg. It's not, but it's a really can't, shouldn't lose this. You really shouldn't lose this one. That's what this is for Winnipeg.
You better not lose.
You better not lose. That's exactly what it is. That's a little bit cleaner.
For the Blues tonight, you probably shouldn't lose this one. Because if you do, could be in trouble. I guess for both teams, that's true. At any rate, I am happy that we are going to get a game six, Amy.
Friday night.
One way or another, we get a game six.
We don't know what time the puck drop is. I am thinking it's going to be another 8:30 puck drop.
I bet it's not that late.
Really? Why do you say that?
Hope.
Okay. So you have no receipts.
I have no receipts. Just hope.
Yeah.
So how's the economy doing? Great?
Well, so the U.S. economy contracted for the first time in 3 years to start 2025. So the Bureau of Economic Analysis advance estimate of the first quarter U.S. gross domestic product showed economic growth contracted. These are such boring words. At an annualized rate of 0.3% during the first 3 months. So that is more than expected. Economists were expecting a 0.2% decline. And this 0.3% decline is also significantly lower than the 2.4 rate of growth seen in the fourth quarter of 2024.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think it's much of a surprise in the sense that we just have a lot of uncertainty right now. And as we talked to Dave Simons yesterday, just the tumult of the economic environment right now, both domestically and globally, people don't know what to expect. Even when Trump promised tariffs, because he did, a lot of his supporters said, well, he doesn't really mean it. This is the art of the deal. I had multiple people tell me that because I asked them. I said, hey, this is concerning to me, especially as a conservative, especially as a fan of the free market, big fan of it. Generally, tariffs, targeted and narrower tariffs, have been more of a Democratic talking point, like Dick Gephardt, Michael Kelly brought that up. And so as a free market conservative, these tariffs concern me. Well, then, this was before the election. The Trump supporters, fans that I had talked to earlier had said, well, it's all a play, right? He's just, he comes out with a ridiculous statement or promise, and then he backs down. That's the art of the deal. Well, the thing is, he actually was going through with the tariffs, and then he started backing down when the economy started to tank. It is what we're seeing right now with the contracted U.S. economy, what we're seeing right now with higher prices and uncertainty. It is, in the moment, something of a cell phone. Like, that's how it feels.
Well, and I think the way you view it, if you are somebody who is doing what you're talking about, you know, this is just a play, and, you know, he's doing this for a negotiating tactic, and all these countries are going to come to the table, and we're going to have all these deals, which none of that has really materialized. The White House does say that they've had all these different countries reach out to them to work on something, but, you know, nothing's come of it yet. So show me when it does happen. I'm here to listen because we'd like to improve the situation, obviously. But I think the way you view it says a lot about you if you're willing to give the benefit of the doubt to this president, but not willing to give it to the last president or two presidents ago. I think it says a lot about your politics, where you're just, well, this is my guy, so therefore my guy must know what he's doing, and he must be doing the right thing in the moment instead of looking at it critically. And I would just, for example, use his Truth Social post from today. And this is what he said, and this is from about 9 o'clock this morning. He says, this is Biden's stock market, not Trump's. I didn't take over until January 20th. Tariffs will soon start kicking in, and companies are starting to move into the USA in record numbers, so on and so forth. Be patient, he says at the end. But back in January, 9 days into office, he said, this is the Trump stock market because my polls against Biden are so good, investors are projecting that I will win. I'm sorry, this is from last year. So he wasn't even president at that time. And he's talking about how this is his stock market. Now he's president for a couple of months and it's not his stock market. Mm-hmm. So I wish people would think critically and listen to what's being said and then make their judgments instead of just, well, this is my guy, so he must know what he's doing. Well, and that goes for whether he's Donald Trump or Joe Biden or Barack Obama or whoever the next president is. Think critically about what your candidates that you voted for have said and stop playing team sports here, because this isn't a sport.
Yeah, and it's like, are you going to take seriously what Trump and his administration say when they said we're going to have a deal a day, we're going to make 100 deals in 100 days? There have been zero deals in 100 days. Zero deals, just right. Uncertainty. Trump also said very clearly he would end the war in Ukraine in 24 hours. We're not even close to that. Thousands of people have died. War crimes continue. So you either take someone at their word and say he's failing, or you say he lied and knew we couldn't do these things.
And it goes for anybody. It doesn't matter if it's the person you voted for or it's the person you voted against. Take people at their word. That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. When we come back, we are going to talk to Mayor Kara Spencer here in St. Louis. She's been on the job. This is her 15th day on the job. A number of things we want to get into with her, and we will do that when we come back on 104.1 FM KMOX. It's Amy Marks Kors and Chris Ranji on KMOX. It is time to go to the guest line today, and it's been just a little over 2 weeks since we have had a new mayor here in St. Louis, Kara Spencer, and now she joins us on the guest line this morning. It is good to talk to you, Mayor Spencer. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me this morning on this beautiful rainy day.
Oh, it's going to be like this for another day at least, so enjoy it,
I
guess.
Keeping the parks green.
It is. It's keeping the parks green. So we were sort of joking about the quick turnaround from the election to then becoming mayor. It's like a week, and you know, you have to jump right into it. Now you've been on the job for 2 weeks. How much does it feel like needs to be done, you know, just to get settled and maybe figure out what exactly it is you're working with and then move forward from there?
Sure. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, the old saying about drinking from a fire hose is pretty much what we're feeling right now. There's a lot of things to get settled, staffing and things like that. But we've hit the ground running. We've made some good progress on some of those things, and we feel good about where we're headed.
You know, when we look at this transition, obviously there'll be some new department heads as you kind of get all the ducks in a row. Where are you with that as far as department heads that are here and staying, department heads that you will be naming?
We are going to be making some announcements here in the coming weeks about that. We've made some good progress. We're going to keep some folks on. We have some city department heads that have been doing a great job for decades, frankly, some of them. And so we're excited to keep them on board. But we are going to be making some changes here as well. So it'll be a little bit of a mix, but the official announcements will be forthcoming here shortly.
So, I don't know if how deep you want to get into it, but how much continuity will there be? Because it is a big apparatus, right? I mean, it's not like you can just come in and replace everybody. So is there a decent percentage of people that you're keeping around from the previous administration?
There are. I mean, some of these folks, like I said, have been around for decades. And so there's going to be a good amount of continuity. Some of the things, some things have been working fairly well. We want to make sure that we keep those trains on the track. But, you know, I mean, I would say maybe 50-50, something along those lines, maybe a little bit more staying on board. But look, we have to make some constructive changes to be able to deliver services better to our citizens, and we're excited to do that.
There was reporting this morning on Total Information AM about you wanting to see that there's more proof. There's proof that a proposed north-south Metrolink line will get federal support before the city commits to spending more money on it. So what is your reasoning behind that, and where are we with that north-south Metrolink line?
Yeah, the north-south Metrolink line is such an important project. I am a huge supporter of public transit, and I, you know, believe strongly that cities that are moving forward, you know, have robust and developing, expanding public transit systems. And, you know, we passed a sales tax in 2017 to support the expansion of the North-South Metrolink line. At that time, it was a 17-mile, 33-stop projected expansion. And, you know, there's been a couple things that have happened since then. In the last couple years, the plan truncated significantly, went down to about a third of the original size to just over 5 miles and 10 stops. You know, and with that really short line, you know, I think it really positioned us for, you know, a much lower rating at the federal level to get the necessary required federal matching to make the project viable. And then, of course, with the new federal administration, it got even tougher. So before we continue to spend tens of millions of dollars on the project, I want to make sure that we have viability. I want to make sure that we're competitive against the, you know, I think 25 other projects that are vying for the federal matching dollars, especially as those dollars tighten up. It's important that we get this right. This is, you know, when we have public transit expansion dollars, they don't come often. And so when we put these to use, I want to make sure that we're doing it in the way that's going to expand our public transit in a way that can position our city for growth.
So what is the appetite for that north-south line in the first place? Because you said it went from the original proposal of 17 miles. Now it's down to less than half of that. Is it an issue of money, funding, or is it an issue of people who live in those areas don't want it there?
Well, there's been a little bit of that. You know, you've probably seen the Jeff Vanderloo neighborhood really being very outspoken about not wanting the Metrolink in their neighborhoods. But look, the original line went from South City to downtown and really strengthened the core of our city. This new orientation bypasses downtown by just going up Jefferson. And, you know, I think there's a whole host of questions that we need to be answering for the public about the viability, making sure that with the new federal metrics on scoring these projects, that we are at the top of the list, because we all know that, you know, locally funding massive transit projects is very difficult, you know, and the vast majority of cities don't do it alone, you know, and we shouldn't either. We cannot afford to do it, frankly, because the price tag is so high. So, you know, I think it's going to take a real ROI, you know, return on investment analysis to really understand how we put our best foot forward in the changing landscape of public transit in general.
I know we've got more questions to ask you. Just a quick question, because you mentioned some of the pushback. What about people who feel that security has been lax on the Metrolink? What would you tell them?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, and I have to be honest, I felt it myself, you know, riding the Metrolink. You know, they're, you know, especially when you see people smoking and doing things that you know are illegal, to be, you know, just kind of doing willy-nilly. And I think that safety concern is something that we're going to be focusing on. I know that's a big concern for everyone, frankly, and making sure that, you know, that public transit can and is used by everybody. It's not just the Metrolink line. Look, the bus system is pretty expansive. You know, we use the buses from time to time. My son, who you know, gets around, you know, uses the bus system. And I want to make sure that this is a system that can be and is used by everyone.
We are talking to Mayor Spencer here on the Chris and Amy show. One of the programs that has been put on hold is something that when it's described or when it's told to you, it sounds like a pretty good idea, mm-hmm. that you've got these derelict buildings in town who have landlords who may not be here. They may be somewhere else, and they're allowing them to deteriorate with no business in them, no residents in them. And that's it's bad for the city when that happens, but these landlords don't, nothing can be done against them. And there was this program to stabilize those buildings, and then there was a problem with the funding and who was getting the contracts to do that, and it was being done against the landlord's will in a lot of cases. So you have put that program on hold. Can you explain what the issue is with it?
Well, the program itself was very well intended. You know, the Board of Aldermen, through a couple of different ordinances, allocated $13 million to stabilize vacant buildings. And this is not just landlords. These are property owners that have allowed properties to deteriorate, as you talked about, over many, many, many years. And the idea here was to put those funds into stabilizing the buildings and making sure that we're doing our part to hold property owners accountable for allowing our historic architecture, the built environment assets that the city has, making sure that we are keeping them intact, because they have a lot of value, not just to the property owners, but to the city as a whole. And so deploying those funds, though, was done in a way that really was extraordinarily, I would say, damaging to the broader community. Because for one, you've probably seen the lack of oversight, the building inspector, who is now under investigation because he set up several entities, it's my understanding, businesses that were awarded the projects of doing the work. And so we saw a massive amount of federal dollars going into very, very questionable contracts and building owners being charged for work that wasn't done. I mean, we're talking about, you know, you've got a building owner getting a bill for $125,000 for, and a lot of times we've seen, you know, evidence of work not being done. So the well-documented issues with this program really, really, you know, pushed us to act swiftly to end the program and so that we can start to immediately reconsider ways to invest the rest of the funds in a way that builds trust and builds community, particularly in North St. Louis, where we've seen so much disinvestment over many, many decades.
So your intention is to have this program, but it needs to be done better. Is that what we're talking about here?
Well, you know, the program itself had a lot of different issues, a lot of problems. You know, I mean, you know, you have tens of thousands of vacant buildings in our city, right? And the program really only had 59 projects, properties involved in it. It's my understanding there was a lack of metrics to decide even how, you know, which buildings were involved. The large amounts of funds put towards buildings, you know, there was no, it really lacked a level of oversight and strategic thinking involved in how you deploy those funds. So the program's intentions, I think, were very good, but we need to rework the entire program. That means who's in charge of it, what are the outcomes, how are we deciding which buildings we're investing in, and how do we deploy those funds in a way that can build community and build up the buildings that have been left to decay over many, many years. It's important that, you know, when you're pumping $100,000, that was the average, you know, $125,000 per building, that, you know, it has a net return for the broader community. And we saw that just was not the case with the existing program.
Mayor Spencer, St. Louis City Hall has dropped its lawsuit trying to stop the takeover of the St. Louis City Police Department by the state. So you had said that lawsuit had fallen short. So that lawsuit is dropped. Is there another lawsuit in the future coming from the city?
Well, you know, Amy, the lawsuit itself was problematic, and that was, you know, an issue that the judge involved identified. And so the city didn't exactly drop it, but it was really dropped by the courts because of the flaws in the lawsuit itself. And I don't know if you had a chance to read the opinion issued by the judge and the order issued by the judge on that case, but wow, it was really scathing. And so yeah. I think, you know, kind of taking a step back from that, we want to make sure that if we move forward with any legal action, that we're well grounded and that we are, you know, in compliance with federal, you know, with the laws required to take action, and that we're doing so in a way that moves the needle forward and doesn't put us in a negative position with the courts and with the state, frankly. I mean, we've got, I think some of the, you know, there were two claims. I think it was unfortunate that the lawsuit was, you know, erroneously described as, you know, really being able to stop the state takeover of our police department. Really, there were just two counts in the lawsuit. You know, and to be frank, you know, the Hancock piece of it that really addressed the cost to the city of the police department, you know, we're looking at whether or not that has merit and we can move it forward. But again, I think it's incredibly important that we handle these things carefully and that we do so with the trust that, you know, that the city has with the court system. I mean, you know, we can't break that down. That's an important piece here.
So what it sounds like is you are, I know that you are against the state takeover, but what I'm hearing is that there just isn't much that can be done about the state taking over the police department, that it's going to happen. You are just concerned with how it's going to be funded, right? If there's an expansion.
What I would say is I am strongly in favor of local control of our police department. Absolutely. And I have been and will continue to advocate for them. I mean, I think that's the right control there. That being said, you know, we are still in the process of evaluating whether or not there's a path here. And if we determine there is one, we'll take it. You know, I think it's important that, you know, that we are made whole, that that we can continue to operate as a city, and that we have a police department that, you know, answers to the citizens that it's protecting. And I think that's really, really important here. So we'll move forward if we can. We're still in the process of evaluating, but I think we're going to have an answer on that fairly shortly here.
When it comes to just the practical aspects of running a city, so much of your campaign was focused on that, like, let's make sure potholes are filled, trash is being picked up. Have there been any steps you can let people know saying, hey, here's what I've done right now to start working towards those basic city services?
That's a good question, and we are focused on that. You know, we have an interim director of operations, and we are in the process of recruiting a full-time new director of operations on that front, and some of the incredible, you know, the important roles there in the streets department and other things. So right now, we have spent the last 2 weeks really evaluating the operations of those departments and identifying immediate and long-term paths to improving the delivery of city services. And I think you'll start to see some of those things roll out. We'll be rolling them out in the coming weeks. But, you know, there's going to be some staffing changes. There's going to be some process changes. And we're excited to roll those out as we move forward. But largely what we've been doing over the course of the last 2 weeks is getting our handle around the existing system and what changes need to be made.
Mayor Spencer, we appreciate your time as always. We thank you for giving it to us. Now that you're mayor and no longer alderman, then you have not forgotten about us. So thank you. And we hope to talk to you again soon.
Of course. I look forward to it.
That is former alderwoman Kara Spencer, now the mayor of St. Louis, just over 2 weeks into the job here in STL. And if you missed the conversation, it will be on the Odyssey app. You can go back and listen to it.
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Hey, the Bill Belichick thing is amazing, and it continues
this
to.
This is a story.
So you did see the whole thing about the CBS Morning News interview where his girlfriend Jordan Hudson interrupted, and when they asked a question about how they met, and she said, "We're not talking about that.
We're not talking about this."
That's what she said. It was so weird. Like, that's the one thing that couples do want to talk about is how they met.
Sounds like me as the worst co-host ever.
Not talking about this.
Every topic you bring up.
Just, that's what you do.
We're not talking about this.
Then there was the story yesterday about how she had interrupted that interview multiple times and then stormed out at one point. Okay, here's the new reporting. So Bill Belichick, who is now, was once the Patriots head coach, is now North Carolina in college, their head coach. So this season of Hard Knocks, you know, the show that's on HBO. Mm-hmm. I love that show. It's great. Gives you an insight into, you know, teams as they get coached and go through practice and go through games. Everybody's mic'd up. It's a really cool thing. And so this season over the summer was supposed to be about North Carolina and Bill Belichick. Well, that whole thing has been scrapped. And according to The Atlantic, it is because, or The Athletic, I should say, it is because she became some sort of a pain in the ass in the situation. So they were all ready to go. And 48 hours later, it was dropped by the producers of Hard Knocks, and she has something to do with it. So she is, it sounds like she's interfering in so many different ways, but I don't know if he's in trouble or what. Ron, but somebody needs to check on Bill Belichick.
At what point does UNC say, oh my gosh, we're worried?
There has already been reporting that they are concerned with her level of involvement.
Not only her level of involvement, but why does he seem so like docile and submissive?
I don't know.
All of
this
a
is
sudden.
A six-time Super Bowl
creepy.
Winner.
You brought up how he's kind of the in-charge guy. No, granted, yes, he's always been weird with the media, but the way he like looks at her, like, am I allowed to say this? Should I talk? It feels like either a hostage situation or that he has dementia. And you forget, oh my gosh, this is the head coach at UNC.
Yeah.
They have to be worried.
Something's going on there. And he is allowing her way too much access. So
she's on the sidelines for every practice.
I know. I'm telling you, this is Yoko. She's Yoko.
But it's worse
than
Yoko.
If you did not watch Get Back, the documentary about the Beatles from a few years ago, and she was in the studio while they recorded the entire time. It was unbelievable. Anyway.
The Chris and Amy Show on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
A swing, and there's a drive. Hit to deep left field. It's a gutter. A home run for Piscotty.
Yesterday, three-run homers. Here's another one. Deep to center field. Get up, baby. Get up. Three-run home run, and the Cardinals now lead it 4-0. You talk about three-run homers, three yesterday, and another today off the bat of Stephen Piscotty.
Piscotty, strong throw to the plate, and they got him. What a throw by Piscotty from right field.
There's a ball hit in the center field. Way back at the track. It's gone! And the Cardinals have tied it up. Stephen Piscotty.
It is a Chris and Amy show on 104.1 FM KMOX. And we go to the guest line this morning because this weekend, on Friday night and on Saturday, you're going to see a lot of this guy and hear a lot from him. Former Cardinals outfielder Stephen Piscotty is with us on KMOX. Stephen, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Good morning. Good to talk with you guys.
It's good to talk to you, too. So it'll be we'll get to the events, everything that's happening Friday and Saturday, right near the ballpark. But let's just talk about you. How are things going? What's been going on?
Yeah, I am, I am busy being a full-time dad. I got three kids, none older than four, so a very busy time, but just loving it, soaking it all up. They say it goes fast, and it does, but yeah, there's not a dull moment in each day right now.
Must be kind of nice to, you know, be in your early 30s and you have all the time in the world to just hang out with the kids.
Yeah, no, it's a huge blessing. It's they say, you know, having kids is one of the best things in the world, and it's true. It's amazing. It's a lot of work. There's no doubt about it. We're sleepless nights and the tantrums, all that comes with it, but it's just watching them grow up, it's such a special thing. So I feel super blessed to be around, at this time in their life.
And that's such a great thing to be able to do that. But to get to that point, you have to make the decision that you're no longer going to play professional baseball. And it's been a couple of years now since you've been out of the game. Was it difficult to come to that decision?
I don't feel like it was, really much of a decision. I would love to keep playing. I was in AAA the past couple years, just trying to kind of keep it going as long as I could. And, you know, I'm just getting to that point in my life where, you know, these young guys coming up, they can do some incredible things, and just getting a little older. So it just felt like a natural time to start thinking about, you know, kind of life after baseball. And so feel super, super blessed. I have so many great memories, especially in St. Louis, of my career that are fun to reflect back on. But yeah, now it's time for something new.
What are some of those moments? I know some will stand out to others, but to you, when you look back at St. Louis, which memories always find their way to the top?
Man, there's so many. I think, you know, what usually pops to the top for me is I had a, you know, a good postseason series. We did lose that series to the Cubs in 2015, but had some success and got that playoff experience in one of the best baseball towns in America. It was something to really experience, and I loved that period of time. You know, my rookie year coming up, making my debut, obviously was super. That's kind of like the dream come true moment. You know, you get your call up and get your first hit or whatever, that sort of stuff. So that also sticks out. And yeah, so there's a lot, but you know, those are some of the top memories.
Talking with Stephen Piscotty, and I'm guessing this is not one of yours, but I know this. I keep getting reminded of it every couple of weeks. And you know what I'm about to say. It keeps showing up in my Instagram feed. That trip around the bases where you get hit by the pitch and you get hit by a ball like three more times. It's just an incredible. Do you get reminded of that a lot?
I
do?
That to a friend.
Like, you're on Instagram. You're like, damn, do I have to see this again?
Yeah, I get reminded. I joke with people. That's what I'm most known for, is that trip around the bases. Because I don't know what the algorithms are, but that seems to pop up quite a bit with the people in the baseball community. So yeah, it was that was a memorable moment as well. No doubt about it.
While it was happening, you had to have been thinking, "Oh, come on, what is going on here?"
Yeah, when I got hit at home plate. Coming around to score, I had a concussion from that when I hit the ground, but it was just like, what was that? Like, you don't think to get hit in the head by a ball running. Yeah, it might happen while you're at bat or something, but it was just like, what? I didn't know what hit me. I don't know, just kind of, it was crazy.
Yeah, and not to harp on it, the one that I... The overlay that I saw, if you're familiar with Scott Sterling, which is kind of like this niche. Yes, that's the one.
That's probably the best edit. Yep. That's a good one.
Scott Sterling, for those who don't know, is a fictional guy, like sports character who's always getting hit. Yeah, he has like really bad luck.
But you're feeling okay now. You're feeling okay now, though, right? Yeah.
Fully recovered. Yes,
good. Talking with Stephen Piscotty here on KMOX. And on Friday, there is a thing happening at the Cardinals Museum. It's called Flashback Friday. And there will be a conversation with you and a host. And it starts at 4:30. You want to tell us about what will be happening at the Cardinals Museum Friday?
Yeah, just getting together with some folks and just having a conversation and, you know, talking about, you know, my time and kind of reliving that experience. And, I'm super excited for my trip out. It'll be the first time back for me to St. Louis. So I'm super excited, you know, for that event. And there's a few more. But, I'm just excited to get back and kind of see the fans and interact. So it'll be great.
And then Friday night after the game, you'll be part of Live at Lowe's, which is the live broadcast that happens at the Bullock at Lowe's, which is right across the street from the ballpark. And, you know, Mike Claiborne usually a part of that. So you'll be there for that. Saturday, there is an autograph signing at the Cardinals Museum. It goes on from 10 until noon, and you'll be there as well. So what is it like to come back to Busch Stadium after all this time?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not really sure. It'll be, like I said, my first time.
So you have not been back? Okay, yeah.
No, I haven't I mean, I've been back. When I got traded to the A's, we played in St. Louis, I think it was 2019. So I guess technically, yes, I have. But kind of coming back is, I don't know, post-baseball. So yeah, I'm sure there'll be some emotion and being back in that park that meant a lot to me. So I'm excited for it. But yeah, I don't really know how it'll sink in. We'll see.
And then you know, you mentioned you played for the Oakland A's after being in St. Louis, played there several years actually. And they've had it's been a really weird thing that's going on with them, and now moving to Las Vegas. And I know that playing in Oakland is a different experience than what the guys will be doing when they get to Vegas. But what are your thoughts on all of that? The team move and then playing in a minor league park this year, and then, you know, playing in Sacramento this year and then moving to Vegas.
Yeah. You know, it's as a, you know, I grew up out here near Oakland, and that was my hometown team growing up. So for me, it's really sad to see them go. Kind of wish it wasn't happening the way it is. Oakland's a that fan base is, it's pretty special when it's a full ballpark. And so yeah, I don't love it. It is what it is. I got no control over it. You know, I wish the organization well, they treated me exceptionally, and so I'm wishing, you know, those guys well. But yeah, I'm a little sad they're leaving. But just is what it is. I played in Vegas last year in the AAA ballpark, and I know it's it'll be a good baseball town. I think they'll do it right. Yeah, I just wish they weren't going.
Yep. Go ahead,
yes.
Amy.
Oh, yeah. Well. I this is kind of going back to your younger days, but I did want to ask you, you went to Stanford, you see, grew up in California, you went to Stanford, but you majored in atmospheric and energy engineering. And I was wondering, is that because you were like, if this baseball thing doesn't work out, I want to, because that's not a light degree that you just pick up.
No, it wasn't light. It was, when I got there, I was trying to do some sort of business degree, and that specific degree that I was trying to do was just, I was in over head over heels. It was just like, I didn't know what I was doing. I needed to find something, and I was like, okay, this sounds applicable and kind of interesting, and took a few classes. And I was like, all right, I can deal with this. So that's kind of how I got to it. But I was definitely kind of trying to figure it out while I was there. But yeah, I was kind of learning about solar power and all that type of, you know, batteries, clean energy stuff. I thought that was kind of interesting at the time. And so, yeah, that's why I picked that. And I mean, I'm definitely a math and science type of guy, so I needed something like that. And yeah, I enjoyed it.
Well,
that's impressive.
And now he's better than us at so many things, baseball and math. I am so bad at math.
I went to Stanford and played
I'm
Major League Baseball.
I'm
rusty. Yeah. I had a times tables test once when I was in third grade, and I was the last one to finish, and it was embarrassing.
He couldn't go outside.
Steven, everybody got to recess, and I had to sit there in the classroom and finish. It was embarrassing. could have used you. Well, it's good to have you back in town. We're looking forward to seeing you here, and we really thank you for being part of the show today, Steven. Thank you for talking with
us. Yeah, of course. Yeah, thanks for having me on. Look forward to getting out that way.
That is Steven Piscotty, former Cardinals outfielder, with us again Friday, the Flashback Friday at Cardinals Museum. It's from 4:30 to 5:15, so a conversation with Steven, that'll be at the museum, then live at Lowe's Friday night, and that'll be here on KMOX. You can hear it, but you could go to the Bullock at Lowe's right across the street from the ballpark. And then Saturday morning from 10 until noon, it is Saturday signings at the Cardinals Museum. Steven Piscotty will be there again, starts at 10 on Saturday morning. Don't forget, we have Cardinals baseball today. It's coming up like real soon. The pregame show is at 10:45, first pitch at 11:40. Cardinals have a split doubleheader. That's right. Split doubleheaders. Man, if you're working for the team, that sucks. game, and then you got to wait like 2 hours in between to the next game. Oh, boy. Yeah, split doubleheader today. All of it coming up on 104.1 FM KMOX. I don't think we talked about this, did we?
We did not, but
okay.
We should.
So last week was the draft, the NFL draft. It started on Thursday, and it went through Saturday. And there was a moment when Deion Sanders' son, Shedeur Sanders, who was getting drafted as a quarterback, there were a lot of people thought he was going to go really high in the draft, maybe the first 15. That didn't happen. It took a couple of days before he finally did get drafted. But at one point during the weekend, there was a prank call made to his phone. And all the players that are
potential
draft picks, especially the higher up guys, they get a separate phone number that if the call comes to that phone, it is about the draft. So they know it's not a prank call or whatever. Well, the defensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons had the list of the new phone numbers. His son, who is 21 years old, happened to be at the house and saw the number on an iPad. He wrote the number down and then prank called Shedeur Sanders to tell him he had been drafted. And it's not good. It's not the first time it's happened.
And that was broadcast, correct?
Well, the kid recorded himself doing it and then posted it, I think, on Instagram.
It's
a really stupid prank. It's happened before.
I think it's cruel.
It's super cruel because
you're vulnerable. You're excited. You're a kid waiting to be drafted.
Yeah, you're waiting for that phone call to find out where you're going. And then some jerk calls and says, you're the number one overall pick. And then turns out you're not. And it's just pretty awful. Again, it's not the first time it's happened. But as far as we know, it's the first time it's happened. And the person who did it posted the whole thing on social media. So there was an investigation done by the NFL, and whatever you think of Shedeur Sanders or his dad and the process, you don't like it, you don't like him, you do like him, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. This is not a good thing. And the investigation found out that the son did it, the son of the defensive coordinator. They have fined the Falcons $250,000. They fined the defensive coordinator $100,000 for this. That is a huge number. And his salary is somewhere around $1.6 million. So still, he can afford to do it. It is a big number. And this is what I said when I found out about it. I tweeted about this, that I would love to have been in the room when the dad found out what happened. And he must have been furious.
Yes. My gosh. Yes. So here's the thing. The NFL, if you're wondering, if the kid did it, the son, who was, 21 years old?
Yeah.
Not a kid. Okay.
No, he's an adult.
Yes. If this guy did it, why were the Atlanta Falcons and the defensive coordinator fined? And that's because the fines were for, quote, failing to prevent the disclosure of confidential information distributed to the club in advance of the NFL draft. This is basic 101 stuff. If the dad left the laptop open on the table, whatever he did so that his son could get the information, 100% careless. It's also the 21-year-old. What an idiot. Like, not only is it juvenile and cruel to pull a prank like that, but not once did he think, I might jeopardize my dad's job with the Atlanta Falcons if I take this confidential NFL information and identify myself by posting this video of Shedeur Sanders being pranked. There are so many levels that are lack of forethought and ignorance on the part of this 21-year-old.
Jax Ulbrich is his name. And he's got to be stupid.
He's got to be stupid.
You have to be. Look,
and selfish. Stupid and selfish. He only thinks about himself, doesn't think about consequences. Because again, not only is it cruel to Shedeur Sanders, but never once did you think this might look bad for my dad.
That's the thing, right? Yeah, it's cruel for Sanders. And you could feel bad for him or not feel bad for him. It's not a good thing to do. But what about your dad? Like you're legitimately threatening your father's employment.
If I'm
and I know this, whatever his inheritance is, if I'm dad, I am subtracting $100,000 plus interest.
I might say no inheritance, and you have to still pay me back. Better get a job, Jax.
Dude, that is wild. But anyway, good. Good. Glad that happened. And it's tough because, again, the guy's 21 years old, so he's not a child anymore. So, you know, you can't ground him because he's not a child, but you can cut off his funding. If I'm dad, I'm cutting off your funding for 5 years.
Do you think that...
You figure it out for 5 years and then we'll revisit things. Maybe I'll help you.
Do you think Jeff Ulbricht doomed his son when he named him Jax?
No.
Matt says yes.
They probably thought
Have
it was cool.
Have you ever met a Jax that you're like, this guy's on the up and up?
Do I know a Jax?
My brother and I used to have these fake bro, like we would have these fake bro personalities, and mine were a Jax and Kai. I'm Jax, I'm Kai. This is my best friend Kai. I'm Jax.
I know a lady named Jax.
Well, is her name Jackie?
It's J-A-X. I don't know.
It's probably because I have a friend that people will call Jax, but her name's Jackie.
So I don't know what her full name is.
There's another woman who makes, she's just a comedian. She's not an influencer because she's a comedian on Instagram. She's pretty funny. She does a lot of boomers on Facebook, but she always has like, my son, Jackson Waxon, has a rash. That's her Facebook post. Jackson Waxon did it again. He's got a rash. What do I do?
This texter wants to know who gets the fine money. Does Sanders get it? I don't think so. I believe it goes to a charity, like NFL charities.
Can I just say this? So, like, this is a failure to protect confidential information. What is it with defensive coordinators and Secretary of Defense that just cannot keep their phones confidential?
This isn't that hard.
It's not, like, literally, defense is in your name. The Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of Defense.
Well, you better do a better job at defending these phone numbers we give you.
What in the world?
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ranji. We're not with you for that much longer today because we got Cardinals baseball coming up this morning. The pregame show happens at 10:45 on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Okay, interesting question for the two very super single gentlemen in this room with me.
The Kenny Chesney song, Back Where I Come From. That one's great.
What about She Thinks My Tractor is Sexy?
No, that one's stupid.
So recent research from Date Psychology has found that Gen Z not into asking people out face-to-face. 45% of men ages 18 to 25 have never asked a woman out in person. That's almost
never?
Half.
Wow.
45%, almost half of men ages 18 to 25 have never asked a woman out in person. Most are relying on dating apps. Younger people just use, like, you know, Snapchat. Like, they don't ask in person. They just send messages, text, Snapchat, whatever it might be, social media, but not in person. And the study, when looking at the reasons for this, quote, rising social anxiety, fear of rejection, and a growing dependence on screens for conversations. That's horrific.
So
All of this is appalling.
Is this 50% the number of people who have asked somebody out? Because maybe there are just, kids who won't do it.
Who don't ask people out,
at
period.
All. Yeah. You know.
Well, it does say, my guess is that there's follow-up questions because it says most of them are relying on dating apps, DMs, and other forms of digital communication. And I will say this tracks with some of the young people I know, you know, say, did you ask them, you know, on a date? And it's like, yeah, I sent her a message. I'm like, oh. And also, a lot of breakups are happening. In fact, recently, all the breakups I've heard of, because in case you're wondering, where are you hearing of these? There's young people in my life and my family and their friends and people come over to the house and so forth. They happen over text, or it's not even text for them. It's whatever social media app of choice. A lot of times like Snapchat or something like that.
Let me tell you.
And I always say, you know, you should really talk to that person in person.
Well, that's a skill people are losing is face-to-face, right?
Data shows it.
But if it were socially acceptable to break up via text,
yeah.
I think we should go with that. We should go with that forever.
It's not. You know, one of my favorite shows, the name of the show is Schitt's Creek.
Yeah.
And there's when Alexis is breaking up with Ted, and they're engaged, and she goes,
Why are you?
She goes, what if I, the show has been over for years. She goes, what if I sent him just like the sweetest little text? Like, no, you got to talk to him in person, Alexis. You can't send him the sweetest little text. Because she just didn't want to do it. Couldn't handle it.
Well, it's stressful.
But it's stressful because people don't want to feel uncomfortable. And it's ultimately selfish. If you're breaking up with someone via text or a DM, it's because you're so selfish because you can't woman up or man up to feel uncomfortable for a bit and say, hey, I need to call this off. Grow up.
What I absolutely think is awful is the ghosting thing. Is when you're having a conversation, maybe it's going well for a while, whatever period of time, and then they just vanish. Like, just one day they stop talking to you and stop responding.
Because I think ghosting is sometimes useful, but that's generally when you're not in a relationship. It's if someone is, like, isn't picking up on the hints you're giving, like, hey, stop reaching out to me.
Ghosting, to me, would be... It feels like, I mean, you're going back and forth with somebody, you're talking with them, you're having conversations.
Kind of flirty.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And then they just one day gone. They stop talking to you, everything. And it's I've never really used a dating app. Mm-hmm. I say never really. I've never used a dating app, but my understanding is it happens a lot there.
Oh, well,
like people
for
who
sure,
are going back and forth. But it could be a thing.
Conversations
where you're
having with 10 people, probably.
But don't you think that if you establish a little something with somebody, you should have to say something to them like, I'm not going to just vanish on you when it's going really well. Maybe you have gone on a date with them or two.
I don't like dating apps because it's juggling where the way people use dating apps is you can go on multiple dates with multiple people.
Sure.
So you're in like three or four baby relationships and then you're choosing. It weirds me out. It feels dishonest. At best and unfaithful at worst. I know you can say, well, it's only a few dates. Yeah, but it's kind of weird.
I don't think it's weird.
That you're dating four people or five people at once.
I think it'd be more stressful or anxiety inducing than it is that weird or unfaithful or whatever. Because it's a lot if you're doing that. You got to keep a conversation with four different people going. That has to be awful. That's why I don't do it. Who just kicked in the door? It's Tom Ackerman.
Tom Ackerman just kicked in the door.
He said, hey, it's time for Cardinals pregame. Get out.
Yep.
So you know what? We are going to step away. We'll do that right now. Cardinals play the first in a doubleheader against the Reds. That is coming up in moments. Tom Ackerman has the pregame show. And anything you missed on the Chris and Amy show is on the Odyssey app. Download it and listen. Back with you tomorrow at 9. Chris and Amy on 104.1 FM KMOX.